we saw in the Jumbotron that Archie Manning and Peyton Manning were at the game.
I can't imagine anyone feels the need to listen to the little Bavarian boy trying to speak some form of English.
AFI. Backstage Stories.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. This is Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, but we're doing something a little bit different this time around. Mo and I decided that we would like to introduce a second episode per month. So at the end of the month, we will always have this main interview with a special guest who is living abroad or has lived abroad at some point and is working in a creative field. And that's something that's really important to us. We don't want to change that. But we did think that maybe we should try and put a bit more content out each month. And so what we're going to do is we've started this side series called AFI, Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, AFI Backstage. So you'll know when you see the word backstage that it's this series, which is just me and Mo. Say hi, Mo.
Hello. It's just, ooh, what's up with my voice?
I think you're getting a cold or something.
Could be.
Could be all that
and I'm
beer.
Just, and I'm not used to speak that much.
That's fair, yeah. Now you're going to have to step up your host game. This would be... this is basically going to be like a shorter side episode. We're going to try and release this maybe a week before the main episode. And it's just basically... So Mo grew up here in Germany and I grew up in America. And we would like to... You know, we're both musicians, so we would like to compare and contrast some stories that mean something to us both. And we're going to have these themes that we're going to fall back on that will change with each episode. And yeah, today I think we decided to talk about sports.
Yeah. All in all, we had many ideas which we could talk about. Just yeah. Because your voice is so sexy that I was saying, like, we got to give the people more of that.
I was thinking the same thing.
Because I can't imagine anyone feels the need to listen to... the little Bavarian boy trying to speak some form of English. But I'm really addicted to your voice. And yeah, one part we were thinking about, mm-hmm. besides music and all this other shit we do, love, yeah. and talk about,
yeah.
But comparing growing up.
Yeah, so like different themes each episode where, you know, we pick a situation that everybody has at some point, whether it's relationships or...
No relationships.
Or no relationships, which is more of my situation for quite a while. Or just things that everyone interacts with and encounters. And we just see the differences between how Mo experienced these things growing up in Germany and how I experienced them in America and the cultural differences that are associated with those topics. So, some weeks we might talk about, concerts we saw or new releases and talk about the music part. But more than anything, this is about me and Mo still talking about differences in culture and staying true to the theme that's the reason we started this whole show. But just a bit more on the side, a bit more about us personally and just, being a bit more, trying to tap into something a bit more personal with our listeners.
And it's more about migration, not just immigration.
That's right. That's
maybe
right,
that's something you could break it down to.
And that's right, yeah.
To be honest, Jordan, I find it pretty funny that you brought up today's topic. You mentioned already sports.
Yeah.
Because the funny thing is, I work as a sports journalist, sports broadcaster.
That's right, yeah.
And I would never dare to bring that topic up because I always see our little project here as something to...
To escape
from this, yeah. and do something completely else.
Yeah.
So it's even more funny to me that you brought up this topic.
Well, I thought it was like a kind of an easy thing for us to tap into for the first episode because, yeah, you have this experience, you have this knowledge about sports. But then I thought, well, I'm curious to the differences between how I experience sports, in America and also especially in the South, where you have this sort of pressure in the lower income families to like, you're shoved into these sports like football and baseball and basketball, and you have to really try and shine, because the whole goal is about getting a scholarship and a good college. And they think if you don't, achieve something really amazing in sports that you don't, you might not really have the chance of getting out or getting somewhere successful. So I wanted to see if, how this American tradition of sport mindsets is compared to, you know, how you grew up here, with, especially because the sports are so different. You guys are so focused on soccer. Actually, all of the world is, except for America for some reason. And, you know, how that's influenced on you guys. You know, you mentioned earlier off mic about how with soccer, you said it was kind of similar to what I was talking about with this pressure, right?
Which was to get out of some situation.
Yeah, well, like the university thing is different, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's this, like, you know, let's say, for example, you had this fictional brother that was really good at soccer. Do you think your parents would have put extra pressure on him to be something greater, like to go into professional sports? That's how it is for us, for sure.
Yeah, but we'll get to that back again later, because I come from a village where there's a... another weird situation about professional sports regarding winter sports.
Right,
But to answer your question, in my example, in my family, I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's subjective, right? Like, it's not...
That's subjective. Yeah. And in general, I think how the society sees sports and what possibility it may be, that might be one of the biggest differences.
Yeah.
Because, and that might be because... You mentioned the big three sports in the US,
yeah.
Basketball, baseball, and football.
Yeah.
And then you still have other things going on where you could make a living out of it and get scholarships or whatever.
Right.
And in Germany, for most of Germany, there is only one sport where if you make it, you can really get to that kind of stardom or make a lot of money out of it, and that's just soccer. So okay. there are many other sports, and that's...
Right.
That's not totally right, but there are many sports where you can make a living out of it. And but the focus, the main focus, is soccer, because it's the biggest sport.
It's huge
in Germany
and
most of the rest of Europe. There are some exceptions from that, but mainly it's that. But maybe let's start from another point.
Because, okay, where do you want to start from?
Yeah, because I think that's one point we'll get back to. Mm-hmm. But there are many little facts about. Regarding sports, consuming sports, practicing sports,
yeah,
we can
right,
compare.
Yeah.
But maybe one thing I thought about, because most recently Kobe Bryant died. Sad thing.
Right, yeah.
And I'm really into basketball.
Yeah.
But it's a whole nother thing being a basketball fan in Europe than being a basketball fan in the US.
Growing up in it, yeah.
And that's why I want to... talk to you about that. Maybe let's keep out the whole story about his death and the reactions to it, because I think that everybody's talked about it. Blew up social media.
Right. Yeah, of course.
But maybe because, as far as I know, you've never been that huge of a basketball fan, but you've always been surrounded by it.
Well, the difference for me is that, you know, so my dad really pushed basically every sport. He was the kind of guy that wanted me to play every sport. And to know how to play every sport. And I think his dream would have been that I could have gotten, like, you know, really invested in a certain sport and gotten, like, amazing at it and, you know, had that as a driving force to get me into a great college and then have a professional career in that sport. For him, it obviously would have been football. That would have been the first choice.
Okay.
American football. But, you know, we watched... all these legends at the time, like we named our very first dog Kobe.
You did?
After Kobe fucking Bryant. You know, that was a huge deal for us. I spoke to my dad briefly about his passing, and especially for me, it's more about the fact that he's only 41. That's really the insane part. And you know, we don't have to go into everything about his family. That's really tragic. But you know, I didn't grow up staying in this sports world as much as I was when I was, you know, between the ages of maybe like 9 and 15. That was probably the peak years for all the sport interest in terms of following these big games, the college sports. Man, college sports in the States is enormous. And you have all these bets and wagers and predictions and stuff going into the major leagues. And I mean, I followed Eli Manning's career since he was a freshman at Ole Miss.
Crazy.
We went to see him at Ole Miss, you know, for 4 years.
Yeah.
Before he went into the NFL. And like, there was one game where we saw on the Jumbotron that Archie Manning and Peyton Manning were at the game watching Eli. And I was like, this is huge. This is the biggest like version of the world that I had ever been exposed to, you know? But, you know, like, probably against my dad's greatest dream, I think maybe his extreme, he was extremely supportive, but probably his pushing of that direction actually turned me away from it. After, at a certain point, like once you get to a certain teenage year with your parents, it can either make or break your interests, what they support and stuff. We watched endless Ole Miss games. That was his team. We watched the Lakers. When I was really young, we were in Mississippi, so we didn't really have, I wasn't as drawn to the Saints or I guess now they're the Pelicans, but before that they were the Jazz back in the 70s, like New Orleans teams. I wasn't as into them as I was until I was later, a bit older, but we had our Southern teams. And I think for us, probably the biggest competition was, oh man, someone from the South is going to hate me so much for this, but I forgot the name of the of the bowl. It was like MSU, Mississippi State University versus Ole Miss. They have this kind of championship game, just those two teams because they both represent Mississippi. I think it's like, oh man, I don't want to misspeak and say something like the Sugar Bowl. I think that's something else. But that was our main focus. We watched all the games and I was playing every sport, and Kobe Bryant was just this huge icon for us. It was like, okay, I had posters of Michael Jordan on the wall, Scottie Pippen, Charles Barkley, Karl Malone, Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal. I was obsessed with these guys. I thought they were like God. I even had a huge thing for Larry Bird because he showed up in Space Jam.
Ah, true.
Remember that? He had like a cameo with Bill Murray.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck? Larry Bird? The three-shot king? The three-point shooter king? Whatever. But yeah, man. I was a huge fan. And of course, I'm a different generation, so it's a bit different. But
do you have this one Kobe moment? Because that's what many people are talking about, and I thought about it for my own. But do you have this one moment, and he delivered many of them, where right. he freaked totally out or did something super crazy?
Well, I remember. I think he used to do these, in the NBA. I think it was also part of the halftime show, but they also had these sort of special events, like these dunk competitions.
Yeah, at All-Star Games.
Yeah, the All-Star Games. Yeah, it was an All-Star Game. And I think he did this, I don't know if he was the one who really pioneered the around the back or between the leg. Maybe that was, what's his name? I forgot all these dudes' names now. I was so into it when I was younger. But he did some sort of either long jump. I know that he did the stint on Jackass. Did you see him jump the pool of snakes on Jackass?
Yeah.
So he did like this kind of distance, which is inhuman. It's just kind of like unbelievable. Did something like that, maybe from the free throw line, like Jordan style, and he just had something to it. And I remember being at home with just me and my dad, and it was dark, and we were watching this All-Star game, and Kobe just did something amazing. And I was like, this guy is everything to me in this moment. You know, like he was just a legend. So it was some All-Star game with my dad, but yeah, okay. I just remember thinking, this dude is, he's going to be a tattoo for me one day.
And is he?
Not yet.
Do you have any tattoos I don't know about?
I do need a new. I need a stamp tramp, and I thought maybe putting 24 on my lower back.
Dude, that would be something very special.
I would probably get shit on Twitter, like you're just hopping on the trend. You know,
but that would be pretty unique.
That would be a special one, yeah, with the wings around it.
Oh shit.
But yeah, man, did you have a Kobe moment?
Yeah, of course. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but when he tore his Achilles.
Oh yeah, right.
And it was like his career was at a point where like, yeah, and is he still that fit? Can he still deliver those humongous stats?
Right.
And he was like throwing anything into his game he could bring, everything. And obviously in this game he saw it was over the top.
Yeah.
It's not going to end good. And then he tore his Achilles.
Yeah.
And they wanted to sub him off, bring someone else to throw the free throws.
Mm-hmm.
And he went back one-footed. I was like, his one foot was, I don't know, just weird hey, yeah.
He like stepped back on it a little bit and
made both free throws, went out. Absolute
legendary, dude.
Legendary move. Yeah, but there were many of them.
Yeah, I mean, he was amazing. I think actually just before he passed, LeBron passed his point scale, right?
The day before.
The day before?
That was the weird
what?
Situation.
It was the day before?
When the breaking news came out that Kobe Bryant died, and mm-hmm. it was or like the first speculations, mm-hmm. They were confirmed like 10 minutes later. I was on the phone talking to a friend, and he's also really into basketball. Mm-hmm. And do you notice sometimes, I don't know if it happens regularly, I'm not that deep into it, when you... On your iPhone, when you're doing a phone call, mm-hmm. it disconnects the internet, or you just don't get
like you leave Wi-Fi into data and it
skips. Yeah, but you don't you don't get push messages or anything, so you don't get disturbed while being on the phone.
Oh yes, yeah, you can turn those off and, for calls,
or it just happens. I don't know.
Yeah,
because I was on the phone and I didn't get any news or whatever, mm-hmm. and then my friend he was talking to me over his headset. Mm-hmm. And was holding his phone in his hand, and at some point he has seen the message, and was like, "Dude, Kobe Bryant died." And I was like, "Dude,
what the fuck?
Hey, what's wrong? Calm down. LeBron has passed him in all-time scoring list." But what's that? Yeah, but you know there are like apps and pages like Bleacher Report who could have done this as a headline.
Yeah, that's so true, man.
Because LeBron has passed him, and he was like. No, he's shut dead. Up, seriously. Kobe Bryant died. I was like, no, how? It's super weird to laugh about it, but that was the situation.
I feel a bit guilty, but it's just a perfect situation. You're like, calm down, man. LeBron.
Yeah, that was my reaction to it, because I just, there was no way I could believe that Kobe Bryant died. You know, his age, he was the freak, super fit. Of course you don't think about anything like a helicopter crash.
He just won an Oscar last year.
Yeah.
Two years ago.
No, it's been...
Was it 2017? Was it 2016? Okay, so he won an Oscar a few years ago. Still, that's huge.
Or eight.
I thought it was 2017.
Well, I have to...
Now you look it up.
We'll look it up. Sorry.
We can put that in the fact check later. But yeah, I mean, he just... he was kind of on top of the world. I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts with Tom Segura, this comedian from the States.
And 2018.
2018. Yeah. Oh, okay. So, yeah, 2 years
Dear ago. Basketball.
Dear Basketball.
Have you seen it?
It's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, of course, when he passed, Reddit blew up with the, like, ripped file clips of it. So you couldn't help but watch it. But they were talking about how he was, like, a venture capitalist. He was investing in all these things. He was, like, a humble guy. He was a good dad. You know, it's crazy. It's really crazy.
Yeah, but I think we also don't have to get too deep into Kobe talk because...
No, it was just the hot theme. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a hot theme and I am interested in your point of view because obviously in Europe, and let's get back to that comparing point,
right?
It always been something else. And you told me, the main years where you were into that deep into sports and following those big games was between 9 and 15, or what do you say?
Something like that, like between 9 and
15. And for me,
15, yeah.
for soccer and those winter sports and anything in my social group that was huge was the same.
Yeah.
But sports like US sports, like basketball, ice hockey,
right?
That came later. So when I was...
Were you already out of high school when basketball kind of clicked here with people?
No. It's always been a thing. But for me, being a kid and not having your own connection to internet and whatever, and
right,
where do you get the news from? You get, I don't know. Of course, you had the news when Dirk Nowitzki, the greatest German basketballer of all time, won his championship or was kicked out of the playoffs or whatever happened to him, and you got some basketball news, but. I was never in a situation where it would affect me as a kid. I didn't play it. I didn't practice it on my own.
So for you, it was still a bit distant.
And then at the age of, I don't know, 12 or 13, I got into it and developed a fandom for the Celtics.
Dude, I like the Celtics too.
That's why I never really liked Kobe that much. I appreciated what he did, but...
yeah, sure. I mean, everyone's a fan of like the Kobe-Shaq combo.
Yeah.
You know, that was like...
But it was way before it. So,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But and then in high school, I lost the connection to basketball again for a few years. And then, like, 2 years ago, when I started working in Munich in sports department and had some colleagues and friends who were into basketball, mm-hmm. brought me back to it.
Yeah.
And since then, I'm watching at least one game a week, yeah, whatever, yeah. and I'm back into it.
I'm surprised now when certain friends who I don't expect are into sports at all will ask me, like, hey, are you going to stay up late and watch the NBA finals? Like, you watch NBA? What?
Yeah, but it's a thing for me now. And I think also within society, it grew bigger again through new ways of output of broadcasting.
Yeah.
Like streaming platforms, sports streaming platforms who are broadcasting games, the NBA League Pass, where you can watch all games of the internet. And especially football has a big hype in German.
Like American football.
I would have called it soccer for you if it was the other football. But American football since 5 or 6 years, since ProSieben started broadcasting it.
Ah, ProSieben broadcasts it.
And they grew a huge hype. And
yeah, that changes it.
Already, I don't know the exact numbers, but even last week, I'm sure a few million people in Germany stayed up late and watched the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I did that like 2 years ago when Philadelphia played the Patriots. And the funny thing was, I'm not super anti Tom Brady, but a lot of people are. A lot of people really hate him, and they think like the referees are like paid off or something to like slide them through the cracks and stuff. But I don't know that much about it anymore. So I was there at first thinking like, oh, okay. I mean, you know, why not the Patriots? They're winning everything all the time anyway. And then some guy just unloaded on me about why he hates them. And then I was like, all right, Philadelphia it is. Let's go Eagles.
but football is a good point, because already on the show, some listeners who might be really deep into it, I wonder if there is anyone who is that deep into our little project here. But you mentioned that you played football in high school.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And even in college? No, it wasn't at college.
High school
football.
Yeah, like, I mean, since I was maybe, yeah, like elementary school through high school. Yeah, I quit my junior year of high school because my dad wouldn't let me quit before that. So I had to work to a certain point where I asked him, like, okay, I've gotten to the point you said was okay, now can I quit?
Oh, okay. So he was like, no, you have to play until that stage.
Yeah, like I think I was a freshman or a sophomore in high school, and I knew instantly I didn't like it anymore. And I felt too afraid to ask if I could quit.
Shit.
Because my brother, like my dad thought my brother was going to be this huge star. He was a big dude. He was strong. He was a good player. But his heart wasn't into it either. So I think when he was a sophomore or something, he quit. And I was kind of like my dad's last chance, like his last hope, you know?
Okay.
And I could see that in his eyes. You know, he was like, whenever I even breathed interest into a sport, he was like, I built you your own golf clubs, which he did do.
What?
He was a golf. He could make golf clubs. Okay. He was like he would buy the separate pieces. He wouldn't like, you know, beat the steel or shit. But like he'd buy the separate pieces from these good manufacturers, and then he would like weld the pieces together and stuff. And he made me my own clubs because I was interested in golf once.
So
you know, like he really wanted a sports kit.
So he really brought on some kind of pressure that you have to do sports and...
Tremendous amounts of pressure, yeah. I mean, my dad, like, he could tell I wasn't really into it, but he just kept... I wouldn't say he was, like, bribing me to play, but he... It was very obvious. Now it's, especially in retrospect, it's really obvious that he was trying to milk any sort of joy, you know, out of, like, I don't know. He was 100,000 times more supportive with me playing a football game than with any of the other interests I was kind of, like, fielding out. But I think I was a junior in high school, and then finally I felt like I was comfortable to ask him if I could quit. And then he was kind of taken aback by it and thought, I mean, okay, you want to quit right now? It's August. It's really hot. And we had these things called two-a-days. So before school starts, there's a week-long, what do you call it? Like warm-up exercise program that gets you ready for the season.
And it's two a day.
Two practices.
Units.
I almost said rehearsals. Two rehearsals
two
a day.
Two units of practice a day.
Exactly. And they're like 4 or 5 hours long.
Ooh.
And it's in August. and you're Shit. And you're wearing pads, and it's excruciating. It's really hot Mississippi humid weather. You're doing hitting drills. You're doing sprints. You're doing you're running plays. You're doing everything, and it's exhausting. I had one friend who passed out once from the heat because he was like underhydrated, and he was telling the coach, "I need to sit down and drink water." And he was like, "Don't be a pussy," and then he passed out. It's really crazy. Like Mississippi football doesn't play around. And he's like, okay, you're in 2-a-days. I called him crying once. I was like, I can't go back. Please don't make me go back. And he was like, okay. And this was actually good advice from him. And I admire what he was trying to do. I think maybe it meant something bigger than what I thought. And basically he was like, you don't like it now. What I want you to do is I want you to stay with it, fight through the tough part, and then come back to me. And I think it was like October or November. He's like, that's middle season. The weather is, I can't remember with Celsius, but it was like, the weather would be like 67 Fahrenheit, which is really breezy and nice football weather. And he was like, you know, your practices are going to be much easier. You're just doing running drills. You're wearing like half pads where you just wear the shoulders of the helmet, but you just wear shorts under it, which is much nicer. And he's like, just get to that point. And if you get to that point and you want to quit, then you can quit. And, so I did that. And I actually, I'm kind of thankful that I did do that. I fought through the hard part.
Yeah.
And then we had the shitty part about it. My least favorite part about it was that we had these big Friday night games. There's a game every Friday night throughout the whole season. And then every Saturday morning, you had to get up at like 8:30 and come back to the school. And you had like a 2-hour like workout and run with the coach. And that sucked, man. Like you just played a big game, especially if you won. Then you want to sleep in, enjoy your Saturday.
Yeah.
You have to get up early, wash your shit, come back to school, work out, and then run 2 laps around the whole field. And I was like a big fat kid, and I hated doing that, you know? And there was one day, finally, I asked my dad, like, can I please quit? And he was like, okay, you got through the tough part. If you really want to do it, you can do it. So then I went to the locker room.
Yeah.
I did the whole thing. I did the whole workout. I did the whole running. I did everything so that no one would question anything. And then I waited in the coach's office until everyone, like, you know, some, we would watch the game before and talk about it.
Yeah.
So at some point, everyone finally walked out. Maybe one or two guys left. And that's when I brought it up. And he made me feel like shit about it.
The coach.
He was not cool. He was like, you're going to quit everything the rest of your life. You're going to be a huge failure. You're never going to amount to anything. And he had me crying, dude. I was like 16.
Okay.
And he was like, if you quit now, you're going to quit everything. You might as well
never going to finish something in your life.
Never going to finish anything. And he was a real dick, man. I'm really glad I quit. And then after that, it was honestly the greatest feeling I've ever had.
Okay.
I drove home from practice back home, and it was like, you got your first blowjob along with your first line of cocaine, and then like God himself came down and like gave you a huge dick that you could just, you know, it was just like this blessing and freedom.
What a description.
You know, it's just like a hug from Jesus or something. It was okay. Like the best feeling ever to quit.
Believe that. But that's crazy, because that brings me to the next point. I don't want to have it too structured, but it really fits.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
Because that leads me to the main difference between doing sports as a kid in the US versus in Europe, or yeah. In my example, Germany.
Yeah, I'm curious because about that too.
You have the whole school programs. So mm-hmm. The Scholar sports programs, starting from elementary,
mm-hmm.
And yeah. If you're good enough. Till you get yeah. out of it and get to a professional level from college.
Yeah.
Like that's the whole thing.
That's like the dream, yeah.
And I actually didn't know that you were that deep into it, where you have that many trainings and drills and whatever at high school. Because
For sure.
Basically, in Germany, you have physical education at school. And that's pretty basic, and you get into many different... many different sports, mm-hmm. like maybe track and field, maybe basketball, soccer, volleyball, whatever. And you'll get deeper into sports within sports clubs. So you, as a kid, you join a sport club, you go to training there, they teach you what you need to practice sport. And you get to a point where you get drilled that much and have that much training when you're talented enough. So at the beginning, you start pretty easy. I played soccer, obviously.
Right.
And you start there, and it's a whole nother thing because soccer is the only sport where you could get to a point comparable to where you could get to in football, basketball, or baseball.
But was there this pressure from anybody? Like, was this idea like,
absolutely not,
I'm going to fucking be super famous?
You have those people, but there are few, right. And you start at the point I just want to look up how many soccer clubs there are in Bavaria, and you will laugh.
God, I'm really curious. I just like living in Munich, I just know the two biggest ones, of course. Like, what there's the there's the Bayern, of course, and then there's oh man, you're gonna love this. I'm like, is it 1802?
Wait a second.
What's the blue team?
1860.
Oh, 1860. Okay, I was close.
Dude, in Bavaria, there are like 4,530 soccer clubs.
What?
And 25,554 teams. So the chances of getting to a professional level are super low.
Oh my God. How do they even manage like championships or leagues or anything? Like, is it just like a free-for-all?
There are super many leagues. So you start at a very low point, and
what the fuck?
That's also why within this sport, depends on the region we live. And my team never was that good because I come from a region from the Alps, from mm-hmm. the mountains, and everyone was into some form of skiing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we always lost to the teams. Who were from countrysides where you have nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so those kids were way more into soccer because it was their main hobby, their main thing to do.
Yeah.
And we were like, yeah, let's go to soccer training twice a week. Let's have a game at the weekend and see what happens.
Right. It was more like just fun and hang out. And
the whole story you mentioned, you have more into winter sports. So, you know, ski jumping.
Yeah, right. I've seen that before. Yeah.
I never thought about it because I grew up with it. I never practiced it on my own. So I tried it as a kid.
Right.
But my parents were against it, and it's so dangerous and whatever.
It's
so
insane. I mean, for anybody listening who does not know what ski jumping looks like, because I hadn't seen it that much before I moved here. But you see these guys who are at the very top of a very large hill. I mean, I guess if you saw, there's just like this Hugh Jackman movie where they shot some of it in your hometown too. But there's like, they start at the top of this jump, they slide down, and then there's this huge ramp. And you can imagine like the two skis on their feet going straight up in the air, kind of like bunny ears, and they just fly. I mean, and they're these like extremely skinny dudes, and they just get super airborne and they fly. Yeah. And they land like way, 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 way down, and then they just zoom past you at the bottom.
And that's something I just last year I thought about it because there was a tourist in Oberstdorf, that's my hometown, asking me about, are there amateurs in ski jumping, mm-hmm. and I never thought about it, and I was like, no.
So everyone you've ever seen ski jump in your hometown is professional.
Yeah, so you either get to a point where you're professional, or you quit. So
how do you get? I mean, in ski jumping, how do you?
You start as a kid, obviously.
Okay.
But you start as a kid, and if you're talented, you're getting to a point very fast, like at the age of 6, 7. Where you're like into 4 times training a week, competition, etc.
6 or 7 years old?
They start maybe at six or seven.
Ski jumping is super dangerous.
You start at a very small hill. I don't know if you've seen the arena in Oberstdorf.
Just imagine them flying down.
No, have you ever been to the arena in Oberstdorf?
Yeah, there's like three ramps, right?
I think it's or five.
Four. Oh, is it five? Okay.
So you started at a very small point where you jump maybe about 15 meters, mm-hmm. and the biggest one is where pros jump to like a length of 125 to 140 meters. Okay. So you start at a very low point. So it depends on your age, and there are very strict restrictions about, okay, you're allowed to do that hill and that hill depending on your age and whatever, because it is a pretty dangerous sport.
Yeah.
But that's the way. So you have no people doing it mm-hmm. besides people being in education or pros.
That's crazy, man. And what's the turning point for these guys? I mean, what, you know, how long do they go before they, you know, like, can you imagine spending your whole life since you're 6 years old practicing for something, and then someone tells you you're not good enough?
And that's the whole thing, because you have this in many different sports. Also, alpine skiing, same thing.
Right.
And the school, high school I've been to, is also a I don't know the English term for it. Internat. Let me just check it. I'm very sorry that I don't know, but I've never used it before.
But it's nothing to do with like international.
No.
Internet.
It's
internet.
Like
it's from the internet.
Boarding school.
Boarding school. Okay, like a private school.
No, it's not a private school, but it's an elite school for kids who do winter sports.
Okay, so it's so just
the best,
a school.
So if you get to a certain point. And you do winters, and you get to a special squad.
Yeah.
From the national association.
Yeah.
You get to this boarding school in Oberstdorf. It's combined with the regular community high school.
So these guys come from everywhere, or they
come from anywhere in Germany.
Uh-huh.
So it's German kids.
Okay.
And if they're good enough at alpine skiing or ski jumping or Nordic combined, which is a combination of cross-country skiing and...
Was that the one with the gun?
No, the one with the gun is biathlon. But Nordic combined is basically, it works that way. First, you do a jump
mm-hmm.
and then you do a cross-country race.
Okay.
And the one who jumped the best starts first at the cross-country race. Simple as that.
Okay.
Short version. and if you get to a certain stage of squad of the National Association, they send you to this boarding school in Oberstdorf.
Mm-hmm.
And because they get special conditions in high school, they get a year longer for school to focus on their sport or whatever they have. They concentrate all the coaches for special sports in Oberstdorf,
right?
And it's all organized all around them.
Mm-hmm.
So like many mates who've been to high school with me have been at the Olympics while being at this high school.
Oh, that's crazy, man! Can you imagine being an Olympic athlete and still having to take a math test?
Yeah, that's the point.
That's nuts, dude.
There's one girl who's been to her first Olympics at the age of 15. That's like,
that's insane, man. That's the pressure must be crazy for these
and
people.
So, and because you talked about the turning point, and some friends of mine, because they you sort out, okay, am I gonna make it or am I not gonna make it at a young age,
right? And then do they go into like, okay, you know, do you settle for, or not settle for, but do you go into like instructing that sport, or do you say to yourself, okay, I didn't make this, I need to take a step back and try something else, or like getting into a different industry entirely? Can you imagine, like, I mean, from 6 to 16, roughly, you become an Olympic athlete and you're still studying in high school, something doesn't work out. Maybe you like snap your ankle or something, or you lose interest, or something just doesn't match. And then you have to stop being an Olympic athlete before you finished high school. What do you, like, at the end of that, I mean, your whole life so far has been that sport. Do you just, do you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to teach the next generation coming in? Do I want to be the person who coaches the next great thing? Or is there someone being like, nah, I think I'm going to be a taxi driver? You know, like, how do they switch that?
And it's a big, and it's also why I tried those winter sports, and I practiced them on my own for all of my life. I'm still really into skiing. I worked as a ski instructor the past years, but I've never been at the stage of wait a second,
mm-hmm.
at the stage of competitive sport.
Right, right. Okay.
And there are many classmates of mine in high school were at this boarding school and had this pressure because one friend of mine, for example, at the age of 15, mm-hmm. and his whole life was concentrated on this. From being 6, 7 years old, every week was planned around, okay, you have training 4 times a week, you have 2 competitions on the weekend,
yeah.
let's manage school around it or whatever.
Okay.
And
so school came second.
And yeah.
Then, okay.
And that's the whole idea of this boarding school, to still give them the education they need to get a proper degree.
Right.
And it works out quite well. But he was at a point, he was doing Nordic combined, mm-hmm. and he was a great cross-country skier. But one season, in this precious season, he didn't manage to get the proper jump at ski jumping, and those are minimal factors.
Right. Yeah.
And that's also why at the professional level, you don't have those you don't have the same World Cup contenders every year, because it can happen any year to any athlete that they have a little injury in summer.
Yeah.
And those are so little factors to get to the perfect point of jumping and your flying position.
Flexing and flying.
Exactly.
The same
and he
way.
Didn't get it for one season.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh shit, I'm getting kicked out of this squad, mm-hmm. which means I'm probably be kicked out of this boarding school.
Yeah.
I moved to Oberstdorf. He was from the area around Nuremberg, so like 400 kilometers away. And he moved to Oberstdorf at 13 years old and built up some friendships there.
Yeah.
And at the age of 15, or was it 16, I'm not sure, he was like, okay, shit. If I can't do the jumping,
yeah.
they'll kick me out of the squad, which means they kick me out of the school.
Yeah.
Which means my whole teenage life, which I built up here,
yeah.
will be just
gone. Man, that's a different level.
And another friend of mine, who was one of the biggest talents in alpine skiing, mm-hmm. and he trained so much and he was so deep into it, and it led to a point where at the age of 16 he had his second, I think another term for it, disc prolapse. It's your back.
Oh, like a prolapsed disc.
Prolapsed disc. That's
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a slip disc. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And so your career's over at that point, at 16.
Fuck, man.
And your
that's
whole
crazy.
Life leads to that one point. And
yeah.
that was the point for me. And it's a very special thing in winter sports mm-hmm. in the area where I come from,
yeah.
which might be comparable to the whole high school and college program with
elite
athletes. But the big difference is all of these sports I told you about mm-hmm. are now team sports.
Right.
So how many players are in a football team, a whole football team, around 50?
Like on the whole team, like not just on the field.
Like 50 people with the special teams, etc.
Yeah, something like that, around 50.
So those are huge teams. And those are sports I told you about are individual sport types.
Okay,
and
crazy.
And they're like 50... At the pro stage, there are like 50 people or maybe 70 people in the whole World Cup.
Like in the whole...
And one competes on his own.
Oh, man.
So you have team competitions where nations compete against each other, but you're doing it all on your own, your whole career. And that's the point. And the only team sports to get professional and to really make a living out of it is soccer, because of course you have handball, you have basketball also, and there are professionals who can make a living out of it. But I mean, like the big careers, the big money, where you say, okay, I have a sports career of maybe a professional career, like an NFL career, like 5 or 6 years, mm-hmm. and I don't have to worry about the rest of my life about money or anything.
Right.
You only have that in soccer.
Right. I just think about these ski jumpers, and then like here I was you know, afraid of my football coach, who was also my algebra teacher. It's such a separate thing. Shit. My football coach was my algebra teacher. The assistant coach was my social studies teacher. Mm. And one time I remember being in class and we talked about healthcare, and I was like, you know, as an American, you always make this comment like, oh, well, if you go to Canada, you get free healthcare. And then he thought he was sounding super smart. And he was like, does free healthcare necessarily mean good healthcare though? And I was like, oh yeah, maybe he's right. Maybe free healthcare doesn't mean good healthcare, which is insane.
That's another topic that's the we mindset. Already talked about, but yeah, but
it's a way of thinking. Strange. It's so crazy. But yeah, I mean, this coach was a real dick, and his son was also a dick, and I'm really glad that I don't have to socialize with them anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's like this sport pressure. I mean, in high school, you have a lot of pressure, but most of the people don't get it, and they kind of understand that. And if you're a lower income family, there's more pressure to get that singleized special moment where you can get into, like, I don't know, maybe even like a better school or something, and then you can have the opportunity to getting into like a, you know, good scholarship into college. And then that is where you really get made or broken, more or less. Yeah. You know, if you have like a good run in college, you bring in a lot of points, you get, you know, you get noticed and picked up in a few media outlets. And then maybe you miss a season because you like broke your leg, or maybe you get like a really bad concussion, but you try and play through these things to keep your name up. You know, you could really fuck up not only your physical body forever, you know, like you could get CTE, yeah. you could throw your back out, you know, whatever, get handicapped because it's such a ridiculously dangerous sport. But yeah, you could also just throw all that away by just playing your best and having an accident. You know, it's real. That reminds me of the ski jumping thing. Like you work so hard, you have your whole life with it, your family's supportive, and then one small minuscule thing, like just snapping your ankle, can throw out a season, which could really potentially screw up that future career. The only kind of benefit is like, if they are professional, they ski jumpers have it harder. There's a lot more pressure because they're individualized. But if you're if you actually make it to an NFL team, then, you know, you're paid a salary as a live player or a not live player. And if you have to spend a season out because you broke your leg, you're not just kicked off the team or something. Yeah. You're not like thrown out. You're just, you know, maybe not as popular for that year or something. Yeah. But people are still going to wear your fucking jersey to the games.
And that's also, and I also don't think that often about it on my own, but it just came to my mind. Another big difference between those kind of sports, and it's also something you could compare within Germany, like sports like, let's say, basketball, not football, but basketball, soccer, volleyball, handball, whatever, or even, I don't know, something like skateboarding, are sports where you don't have to invest that much. So basketball or soccer, you just need a ball, some people, and you could start right away.
Yeah, that's true.
And it gets more and more professional. You get more and more gear and better gear or whatever.
Right, right.
But with all those winter sports,
you have to have so much gear to begin with.
There was also a reason why I didn't get that deep into it as a child, because it was at a stage my parents were pretty young and they were like, yo, kid, we just don't have the money to invest into you, because with skiing, those kids start, you need like 3 or 4 pairs of skis at the age of 7.
It's crazy.
And you need to drive you around, you need the ticket for the lift and whatever, a pair of skis at that age, for one pair of like $300 you invest. And for those winter sports, parents have to invest a lot of money right away.
Yeah.
And that's why it's from the beginning kind of an elite thing. Because like you say, In football or basketball, in poor families, it could be that parents see a chance, okay, my kid just is a sporty kid and starts to work out and starts to play a team sports and might bring us out of the situation because he earns a lot of money.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be possible with any kind of winter sports, because the family would have to invest a lot firsthand.
Right.
And then you have a time span of maybe 15 years where you see, whew, there are little chances. If he's really talented, it could be. But still, if he gets to that point, he won't nearly make that that amount of money you get through playing soccer or football or basketball.
So if you're a professional, it's like you win like a major ski jumping championship, or you win like an Olympic thing. So you're, you know, are you, when you're doing that, Do you think these guys are doing it for the notoriety because they're not getting that much money, or are they doing it
they're
for
still
the...
getting good money.
Okay, so okay.
They're not poor, but it's nothing compared to...
It's like $40 million contracts or something.
Not nearly. Yeah. You have also experienced the Vierschanzentournee in Oberstdorf, the biggest ski jumping event of the year.
Right, yeah.
End of December in Oberstdorf.
Right, I saw that.
The winner of the whole tournament is like four stops. First is Oberstdorf, then count three others.
Yeah.
And four competitions. And the winner of the whole thing, of the whole tournament, wins 25,000 euros, which is still... For the both of us.
No, that is, I mean, for me, it's an ocean of money.
Yeah.
Still
for me too. But compared to, I don't know, look at a mediocre NBA player still gets a veteran who plays mediocre basketball still gets a...
Few million, probably.
A few million a year.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's so much money in sports in America.
And the concept there is many of them... They basically compete for the army or the national police or something. They have a special, special departments where you do the basic, how do you call it? The army, the basic program.
Training.
The basic training.
Yeah.
And have like 8 weeks a year where you work there and they invest in you and your sports. And okay. You can also go to university through them and whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of a system. They call it Sportsoldat, like sports soldier.
Okay.
And they support you and give you also opportunities besides your pro career.
Right.
Because within the sports system itself, there's not that much money. That's the whole thing about it.
Okay.
But we got really deep into that. But one other thing I wanted to talk about you, and we already are talking for 50 minutes. Could you believe
wow,
it?
Wow, okay. Okay, wow.
But one That's last thing I wanted to talk about is the whole social part. So you told me, like, your dad really wasn't too... I want to have one kid who makes it with sports.
Yeah.
I didn't have that. And I want to talk to you about pressure. So, like... you have to do sports. And for me, a European who's never been to the States in his life, like the whole cliche is like the cool kids playing football at high school. How's that whole pressure? How's it been for you? You know what I mean? The pressure, yeah. You have to be sportive and you have to be successful within sports. And
yeah. I touched on that a little bit earlier where it's like... you know, I think for my dad, it wasn't about that he would imagine I could be successful for money, but I think he just wanted to have this son that he could go cheer for in the stands. I think it wasn't about like, I want my kid to be famous. I want my kid to be rich, but it was more like, I want to go to these games, the things that I'm obsessed with.
Yeah.
And see my son be a part of that, you know. But there are so many families that I encountered and met who, you know, and you see it more as you get older because you get more aware, but you see these families that this kind of lifestyle, believing in sport is what they believe is all they have. And in America, sometimes you do get these limited options. You know, you have like these lower income families and they see a window here. But of course, there's this other huge...
And you have those stories like look at basketball, Allen Iverson,
yeah, example. Allen Iverson, for example.
One of those examples, a very, very poor family.
Yeah.
And he...
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, about, like off mic, I don't know, I don't want to butcher the line completely, I'll just paraphrase it, but like a really great line from Notorious B.I.G. is like, you know, to get out of the slums, you either have to like be really good at basketball or sling crack. That was like kind of the only option. That was the 90s too. That was like primo NBA years. You had Jordan, Bird, you know, whatever. But no, Bird was before that, wasn't he? No, he was 90s.
He was mainly 80s.
80s, okay.
Early
but
90s,
still, yeah. It's like, yeah. I don't want to make it sound like all sports in all of America are only coming from people who are trying to get out of the slum. It's a big chunk of it, of course. It's a huge prospect of like getting the name out there. But there's also a huge part of that is these wealthy people who
you
have
sports like lacrosse, buddy, also told you off.
Dude, I mean, yeah, forget not just baseball, basketball, and football, which is like the big three, but you have tennis, you have lacrosse, you have golf.
Hockey.
Huh?
We haven't talked about hockey yet.
Hockey, which, you know what, we don't have to because I don't know anything about it. I've never been to a hockey game. That's a different state for me, man. Like, I can only really talk for the southern states.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but yeah, I have some friends who are really into hockey. I used to think hockey was cool because Adam Sandler would wear the jerseys and Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing I can relate to is like, I saw that, I know that's there. There is also this other side of like prestige, tradition, family, passing your name down thing. Like in these colleges, like Ole Miss, you have the Mannings, you know, that's like, of course, Eli and Peyton are both going to play football. They're both going to be in the NFL. They have to be good. They have to work hard, of course, but it's kind of like, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of notoriety, that name Manning, it's huge, you know, so. It makes sense. The there's both sides of it. It's a huge, huge country. So you know that part does connect to this skiing money family investing very early, like private lessons, all the right gear, the perfect shoes, you know, whatever.
Personal coaches or whatever.
Personal coaches, yeah, they push the shit out of it. But I can, from experience, only really speak for the side that wanted to go see their kid at a college game or. Mm. Or make a career because they worried that there wasn't another option.
Yeah, and for me, it was like for my parents, I never had that pressure. It was I was always told like, yeah, do some sports, do something physical.
Get some exercise.
Yeah, get some exercise, whatever it might be, whatever makes you happy.
Yeah.
And I tried a lot of shit. So, and I always had fun in all of the mountain stuff, like skiing, mm-hmm. hiking, climbing for a while. I didn't do it for the past years, but my whole youth, and all those stuff, but never in a competitive way, just because I had fun with friends on the mountain or whatever, and cheap equipment or whatever, just doing it. And I always played soccer, and my mom, for example, she was always super anti-soccer. She was like,
really?
Oh, you have this away game. I have to, and it was like the thing. I don't know if it's comparable to anything like football, or, but there was this rule kind of that after each game, one mother of a player would wash all of the shirts.
Oh, really?
It's like, oh, do I really have to do this? And you have this away game. Pooh, I can't bring you there, and I don't want to bring you there. That was more kind of the thing. And for me, it was more like the pressure within my...
In your social groups, right? With your friends.
My social groups, because many of them were in a stage of competitive sports, and I was like...
Sure.
I was kind of the kid, like, trying anything, like music, sports...
Crack.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't get crack where I grew up.
Just butt crack.
No, but kind of anything, and I never had that pressure from my parents, like, but like more from the people I grew up with.
Yeah,
and it's still kind of that way when I come home, like, yeah, and you live in Munich now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do there? You can't do. You can't go skiing every second day, and what do you do there? And it's also something that socialized me, and I also love doing these things, but when I was about around 16, I got to point like, okay, I don't have to fulfill any expectations. It's not like that I'm way over the point that I want to get into competitive sports, so why do I have to compare to other people doing the same thing? So, and since then, sports is a part of me. I'm someone who gets bored by just having a gym or running routine.
Right.
That's also cool and I do it, but it couldn't be the only thing for me. And from time to time, when I get home, I go skiing, I go hiking or whatever.
Yeah. I'm, stuff that you've done since you were a kid.
And I feel very privileged to have this space with my parents and have all these activities there, because many people do this as their holidays and ride like 6 hours to the mountains.
Yeah.
And that's cool, but I realized, okay, I have many different interests.
Yeah.
And sports is one of them, and I'm really into sports. Actually, as from another side, like I told from the beginning, I'm really I started to work in sports broadcasting, and that's something I love, and I love watching sports and analyzing it and whatever.
Actually, I would say this is probably a really good moment because I think we should wrap it up. I would say that you could plug your sports show, or you have two sports shows, right? Because I think some people here don't know your sport, don't know about your sports shows.
Yeah, we're doing different stuff about sports. I'm part of a basketball podcast actually, but it's in German.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I mean,
only for our German listeners.
This is your only English show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. If you're German and you're listening, the show's in German. Don't worry.
There's a basketball podcast we're doing. It's called Buzzer Beat Hip Hop und Basketball.
Buzzer Beat Hip Hop und Basketball.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's about hip hop and basketball.
Oh, that's pretty dope, actually.
Yeah, and it's a cool combination.
Absolutely.
And I'm doing a lot of other stuff, but nothing I could link here because they're not my own projects.
Okay, okay.
But yeah, and I love the point of view to sports from that perspective.
Yeah, that's always
that's
really
where
fun.
I am now, and yeah, and that's also why I told you at the beginning. I love to talk to you about all those other topics because for me it's like sports is some form of recreation on my own in my free time, and it's my job to talk and analyze about it and have to deal with it.
Yeah,
and I also have other interests like playing music with you,
right?
Talking about weird immigration processes with you or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's my situation about it. And I'm happy to never have had this pressure in my life to get to some point in sports.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, I would say we wrap it up there because I got to go to the bathroom and I had a long day. I think you did too.
Yeah.
And but, it went by really fast, right? Like,
it went by pretty fast.
I thought this was going to be like 25, 30 minutes tops.
Yeah, and it might get out of hand, but...
No. I think it's good.
We just try something new.
I think this is something that I wanted to do anyway. It's a bit more relaxed. It's a bit more open, a bit more natural. And the guest show is going to stay. Yeah, the guest show is going to be like, you know, we have it guided the way that it is. And we interview the guest with our research and the things that we want to hit. And this is a bit more like, it's about you and about me. Two different countries coming together. Still an immigration story, a migration story. And it's about, you know, music and culture and life and stuff. So we really are thankful that you guys clicked on this. We hope that you enjoyed it, that you
keep
listening.
And we would love feedback on it.
We'd also love some feedback. Is there a topic that you want to hear about, something that you're curious about from, you know, my perspective or from most perspective, or something that you have a comment or a critique about if you disagree with something that maybe we got wrong?
If you want me to talk less...
or me, then send us all your ideas, especially for if you have an idea for a guest for Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, write us an email at podcast@m945.de. And that's it, man. So thanks a lot, guys. I hope you enjoy. And see you soon.
See you soon. See you soon. Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.